Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Dale and Keith Show.
Get along to Tanner. Tanner to the slot.
What was that?
That escalated quickly.
Dale Arnold.
He's definitely going to crack at some point. I have a lot of faith that we're going to start putting pucks past him here pretty soon.
Rich Key.
Giannis is going to knock it down and give us the little Steph Curry.
Man, he made a lot of threes. He shot a lot of threes. He made a lot of threes.
I felt like we were playing at a good, at a high level. He's got to give them credit, you know, that they played better than us tonight.
Dale and Keith, middays on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Hour number two, Dale and Keith. Sports Radio WEEI live from Fenway Park in the WEEI Ford Clubhouse studio. Afternoon baseball, getaway day for the Sox as they try to wrap up the homestand and complete the sweep of the Oakland A's. Head for Chicago, where I'm sure it'll be toasty warm there.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be great. Beautiful May weather today.
Earlier this week in Chicago.
Awful. Awful.
You know, we were just talking about this. We just got out of April.
Yes.
The wettest month, the most days with rain in the history of Boston, and not just rain, it's like 40 degrees in rain.
And I think there's a name for it. I don't know what it is. Like, is it seasonal
miserable
depression? No, I my mood is affected by the weather. If it was a sunny day out, I'd be thrilled. I'd be on cloud 10 if it was a beautiful day.
Well, the fact that you're apologizing indicates to me
something's off.
Completely off.
I know. I am. I apologize today for the first time in years.
Ever.
And I don't like that feeling, Dale, but I just felt like it needed to be done. But I think it also has something to do with how cold it is out, miserable and cloudy.
Somewhere, Mrs. Keefe is going, oh, sure, now you apologize.
I'll take one.
Like, oh, yeah, no. Don't be afraid to trot one of those babies out to me.
Only those deserving will get an apology, including Mark and Medford and the other callers that suggested benching Pastrnak. Now, I don't think they do it, but I don't think it's as crazy as I thought it was yesterday.
I will tell you, and just because you know we're interested in trying to update you as best we can
with
what's
are
going on out
That's
there.
That's right.
There is a continuation of the hearing in West Palm Beach, Florida, the hearing in Robert Kraft's solicitation of prostitution case.
Mm-hmm.
Third day. We're talking about a misdemeanor, but the third day.
Yeah,
the third day of the hearing.
Yeah.
TJ Quinn of ESPN is there.
Well, this guy's been
it. And I'll give you a couple of quick updates from TJ Quinn. He said the hearing in Robert Kraft's solicitation of prostitution case continues for a third day today in West Palm. He's trying to get the video evidence tossed from the case, which could effectively kill the case against him. Again, this is a misdemeanor case.
Uh-huh.
This is TJ writing.
Yeah.
His attorneys were quick to note that video evidence in a case against another accused John in Martin County was suppressed. Meanwhile, Kraft's lawyer is trying to skewer the lead Jupiter, Florida Police Department detective, suggesting he misled the judge who issued the warrant for the video. The long, contentious testimony of Jupiter Detective Sharp is finally over. Kraft's attorney repeatedly attacked his experience and honesty. Sharp asked if he's excused. Judge Hanser tells him, "I'd get out of here as quickly as I could if I were you." Sharp responds, "I'll run."
What?
This might be key. The evidence in the Martin County case was tossed because officers failed to stop monitoring when someone in that spa wasn't committing a crime. Sharp says in Kraft's case, Palm Beach County, they monitored properly. Defense says otherwise.
You think it's the best approach just to rip this guy? I feel like all of a sudden...
To take a police detective and suggest that he's dishonest.
Yeah. Do you think maybe the video might pop up online somewhere, as if this is what you're doing? Is this the best approach? I mean, maybe it is. These guys know what they're doing, I suppose.
I'm gonna suggest that Robert Kraft was not involved in the development of his defense strategy.
Yeah.
It was his high-priced legal
team.
They're
like, let's crush this guy and see how this goes.
You know, and they're doing what they think is best to help their client. I understand that. Robert Kraft probably is going to have some discomfort with other police departments or police officials in and around Foxborough Stadium If his defense strategy is basically to suggest that the detective is dishonest.
And we know they have a good relationship with the Foxborough Police Department with the Chandler Jones incident and everything else that has gone on there. But, yeah, that is going to be a tough one to spin going forward. Again, really just trying to make sure that the tape doesn't get out there because based off of everything that we know, he is...
By their own admission.
He's done it. He did everything that he's being accused of. And yet... There's loopholes and there's high-priced attorneys involved here. And so, I don't know. Every day it seems like it's a little bit different, though, on whether or not the tapes are going to be released. As it stands right now, it feels like they won't be. But the last thing I read was they're suppressed but not indefinitely. So this could change in the near future. So, I mean, it's just sort of he can't be feeling all that comfortable about it, right? Like every update that happens, there still hasn't been any guarantees for him that this video will see the light of day.
Can you imagine a judge suggesting to the police detective after his testimony is over, I'd get out of here as quickly as I could?
Yeah, that is weird. That is odd.
Sounds like a judge with a pretty good sense of humor, actually.
Although we also heard a judge in the Craig Carton case say first time, long time.
Yeah, that was...
So we've heard some stuff.
So that's the latest. Yeah. The hearing continues. This is the third day of testimony in a hearing to suppress the evidence.
Correct. For two misdemeanor charges.
Hey,
why not? If you can afford it, go ahead. Go ahead and do it.
All right, so that's the story from Florida, and I just wanted to update you from TJ Quinn. We've been talking about the Bruins loss last night, the Celtics loss last night. I think you correctly pointed out earlier that the Bruins loss was worse.
Yeah, because of where it was in the series, too. I mean,
you're
now
down two games to one. Look, if you win tomorrow night, everything's fine. Everything's good. Although it feels like, you know, how you're going to beat Sergei Bobrovsky
that's
the way he's playing
thing,
in the last couple of games. But if you do, now it's best 2 out of 3. You've got home ice. You're feeling good about your life. But if you lose, you feel like, man, you are not beating that team. You're not beating that goaltender in 3 straight games.
Yeah, because it was such a swing game for a number of reasons. First of all, it's back-to-back wins for Columbus. It's another game where Sergei Bobrovsky looks like the most dominant player on the ice. It's also another game where Brad Marchand commits a dumb penalty. The top line, or let's just say the top three players, are not getting the job done, regardless of what line that they're on. And they're committing penalties, and they're in the box, and they're giving up power play goals. So it's just been really frustrating. But again, they win a game in overtime, they lose a game in double overtime, and then they lose a game by a goal. And yet it feels like Columbus has complete control over the series.
Yeah, 2-1 feels like 4-1.
It does right now. But there it's close. Like, do you feel like the series is even?
I really do. I mean, the difference in this series to me is Columbus has produced on the power play. The Bruins have not.
That's
the difference in the series.
Right.
And if they can somehow... I've heard, I think Tory Krug said, Bruce Cassidy is the best power play coach I've ever been involved with. That it really is his strength. The Bruins' power play was a strength for this team all season long in this series. And by the way, they killed it in the first series against Toronto.
Yeah.
Like 43%.
Oh, it was off the charts. Yeah, it was really good. And now they showed the graphic last night. They showed what Columbus has done. So some of this is not just, it's you know, run out on the Bruins and their success. Columbus took Tampa Bay, who had the number one power play in the regular season, and completely shut that down. I think they gave up a goal or two, whatever it was, on the power play, but they really limited them. And then the Bruins had the third best power play in the regular season and a tremendous power play in the first round, and they have cut that percentage in half. So Columbus, whether it's Bobrovsky or Jones or their forwards or whoever is doing it, those guys have done such a good job. It just, they feel like suffocating is the word that comes to mind because the Bruins, even when they have control, you know, in Columbus's end, you have this great goaltender, but then you also just have a bunch of guys for Columbus getting in the way and blocking shots or, you know, creating turnovers. They've just done such a good job.
Celtics, on the other hand, also lost last night, but I feel strangely confident because I'm going to tell you right now, Kyrie Irving will not have another game like that in the playoffs.
No, he won't, and it was. Especially coming off the game that he had, and you know, it led Paul Pierce to saying that the series was over. And I know you and I didn't believe that, and you're saying, you know, Giannis, I think, is the best player in the NBA. Although the callers that have been saying Kevin Durant, they certainly have an argument too. Durant's been playing fantastic. But I just like the all-around game that Giannis has. He was going to the basket. He was going to the free throw line. He was really aggressive. Middleton was really good. Middleton, the first half, I think, had 20 of his 28 points or whatever it was. And then Eric Bledsoe was maybe for the first time really good against the Celtics, really effective. Usually he is useless, and that is such... When he's going well, when the third guy on their team is going well, they're going to be hard to beat. Although I don't anticipate Bledsoe having a great series the rest of the way. And as you said, Kyrie is not going to play like that again. I would
maybe
be
in his life.
It was just he was all out of sorts. It wasn't good.
I give Mike Budenholzer credit. He had a great quote after the game. He was talking about adjustments, and I'm paraphrasing, but what he basically said is, you know, coaching adjustments are way overrated.
Yeah, we made fun of Giannis.
Shots.
You know, we made fun of Giannis because he was like, "Well, we don't need to make adjustments." And I was like, "Well, you lost by 30 or whatever. Like, you don't need to make adjustments." No, they needed to make shots. They hit 20 threes. You know, Middleton hit 7 of them. You got Lopez stepping out and knocking them down. Bledsoe, even Giannis hit a couple of threes, which he doesn't normally do. George Hill, like, they were getting it from just about everybody. Shine, pull up Charles Barkley talking about the key for the Bucks, because obviously, you know, TNT guys are taking a look at this, and I agree with Charles, because
and Shaq may be throwing down soon, huh?
They have a little thing. They snipe at each other. But with the Celtics, it needs to be Kyrie Irving. It needs to be him every single night, and then it's the other guys and who's going to chip in, who's going to be the second guy, who's going to be the third guy. That may change every night. For the Bucks, it's got to be Giannis. He's always going to lead the way. But then their second and third guys maybe don't have the resume that the second and third guys do of the Celtics, but they can still be pretty good, as you saw last night, and that's what Barkley was talking about.
I'm going to disagree with Brad Stevens and everybody else, because Giannis was only 7 for 16. If you go back... He was somewhat similar in game one. But
yeah, slow start, 0-for-3 in the first quarter.
But I'm saying, I think they'll take 7-for-16 every game.
Sure.
But the key is how, and we knew this coming in, can Middleton and Bledsoe hold up their end of the bargain? They need 20 points from every guy. They need 30 from Giannis. But Middleton and Bledsoe, to me, they're going to be the key.
Right, because I think with the Celtics, you say, all right, is it going to be Jaylen Brown tonight? Is it going to be Jason Tatum, which it has not been at all in this series? Is it going to be Gordon Hayward? Is it going to be Al Horford? You know, who are the two other guys that chip in? And so on the one hand, you're like, oh, this is great. You have great depth. But if Kyrie doesn't get things going, they're really in trouble. And so like Barkley was saying, it's the same thing with Milwaukee. Giannis basically has to get 30. Right? He got 29 in the game yesterday. Like, he has to get his... But then those next two guys, you're certainly not going to rely on Mirotić or Lopez or Ilyasova. So it's those guys. It's Middleton and it's Eric Bledsoe. And Eric Bledsoe, I mean, you might be able to. It might be as simple as that. If Bledsoe scores 20, they win. If he scores 5, they're going to lose.
You told me yesterday he stinks.
He does against the Celtics.
Last night he didn't.
Right, all of a sudden he didn't. And so now, and that game was also obviously in Milwaukee. So when they shift,
I think you should apologize to me.
To Eric Bledsoe? Or to you?
No, to me. Oh,
no,
yeah,
I never will.
You told me.
That's never going to happen.
I know.
He normally sucks, and that was the thing. And that's one of the reasons why they were able to win going away. A huge third quarter, and then they ended up, you know, we saw the Time Lord last night in Yabusele. Like, it was a blowout. It was a terrible game at the end. But if Bledsoe can take that game and bring it to Boston, which he certainly couldn't do last year in the playoffs, then the Celtics might be in for it. But if he struggles like he normally does, I think just Giannis and Middleton is not going to be enough.
I think that, as I said, I'm actually not concerned. They went to Milwaukee. They got what they needed. They got the split. They took home court advantage back. They come home. I think they're going to play great in the two games at home.
I think so, too.
They play great here anyway.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be a 7-game series going in. And, again, I didn't expect it to be both blowouts, but sometimes that happens. Like, you go back and look at some of these series in the NBA, and there might be a 6 or 7-game series, but there's not very many close games. I can't really explain it. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just because so many teams are obsessed with the 3-point shot that they're like these college teams, and when they get going, they look unbeatable, but then when they're missing, they look horrible, and then it ends up being a blowout come fourth quarter. But I think these teams are pretty evenly matched, similar with Toronto and Philly, you know, the other Eastern Conference semifinal matchup. That's tied at 1-1 right now. they might not have the most competitive games, but yet they could both go 7, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Is it easier from an observer's perspective, as a fan, is it easier to watch your team go out and just get slapped around in the second half and, okay, it's not a – or you know, fight and claw and goaltender pulled, extra attacker on, you're flying all over the place and you just can't quite get one by, and that's all.
Yeah, I think so. I think, well, unless it's like a game deciding kind of thing.
Right, not,
like,
not in a game 7
Right. But like in the middle of a series, I think you're right. Like last night, you're like, oh, that sucks. But they could sit some of the guys. You know, they're not playing 40 minutes. They're not going crazy. And then you lose at the buzzer and it can just be so disheartening. I think it's probably easier to bounce back from a game like this. We just saw the Bucks do it. The Bucks got blown out of their own court, and then they bounced back.
Despite what Paul Pierce said, one game doesn't generally...
I can't believe he said that. I mean, I guess it had to do with... I mean, he really... like, talk about recency bias. It's like me walking out of every movie theater. Best movie I've ever seen.
Ever.
Oh, that's the best. You can't top that. And then you think about it a little bit. You're like, oh, well, no, maybe it wasn't. But for a guy who has played in so many playoff series where a team has won... going away one night and then loses the next, I don't know why he was saying that, because he had to know that Milwaukee wasn't going to shoot that poorly every game the rest of the series. It only took him another game, and they knocked down 42-43% of their threes last night.
If a team goes out there and just absolutely is on fire, shoots lights out, you know, they just can't miss. Everything they throw up goes in, you say, all right, that's not going to happen again. But if an NBA team goes out and shoots uncharacteristically poorly, like Milwaukee did, it's pretty safe to say, all right, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, no, they're gonna bounce back a little bit. And I think, you know, Horford still did a pretty good job on Giannis, I thought, at times. I think that's a matchup that they're going to have to continue to throw out there. But it's the other guys. I mean, again, Middleton and Bledsoe combined for 49 points. So if that happens, I mean, what's everybody else doing defensively?
I heard this morning, driving into work and listening to Mutt and Callahan, as I do every morning.
Yes, smart.
I heard their superb analyst say that the guy that was on with them.
Yeah, who's that?
Say that, whatever.
Some other guy.
Say that, you know, there's just absolutely no way that he thinks that Brad Stevens is bad Stevens.
Oh, well, I can imagine who you're talking about now.
He got out-coached, that he didn't make adjustments. You know, that Budenholzer made adjustments, and then Jerry quoted Budenholzer as saying, adjustments is totally overrated. We made shots. They didn't.
I was going to say, the Celtics shot under 40% as a team, you know, from the field as a whole group. And then even, you know, by the fourth quarter, who cares? Some of the garbage points and stuff, like, it kind of skews it a little bit. But, yeah, I think it was more of a who made shots, who missed shots. I mean, I know that's kind of simplistic.
Isn't it as simple as that?
I think a lot of times it is in a series. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't make adjustments. I mean, the coach still does something. Like, I'm not saying that they just go out there, roll the balls out, like, here are my guys. Like, you can make adjustments. You could figure out different lineups if you want. Like, I think going into the series, we weren't sure if Baines was going to start or if Morris was going to start, and he opted to go with Morris. You know, game one, it looked good. Game two, Morris actually made his shots. Morris actually really wasn't the problem last night, but that wasn't the case. So, could there be adjustments? Sure, but I think from game one to game two, there were probably a lot less than you would think based off of what the scores were.
Well, this same superb analyst was talking about how do you, if you're the coach of the Celtics, how do you let the Bucks go on a 28-2 run?
Yeah.
And again, Jerry Callahan, the voice of reason, said he called a timeout in there.
Yeah, no, he did.
So
he tried to stop it.
Yeah, so he did.
Yeah.
And that seemed to deflate the superb analyst a little bit.
He should have gone out
there. Yeah, but he didn't. They still went on the run.
He should have been like Mike Tomlin and like try to trip a player or something. I don't know what he was looking for. I mean, that's been a complaint I've had throughout the season at times where Brad Stevens, it feels like he's late to call a timeout.
Right.
I don't know if that was necessarily the problem last night. The Bucks just had it going. They were knocking everything down. Then the Celtics, I think at that point, they started to unravel a little bit, and then guys were trying to get them back in it like on their own. They're like, "Oh, I'll take this shot," you know, like I'll take this shot, and we'll snap out of this. And then it just all of a sudden snowballed on them, and they go from what were they? They were down by like 4. Then the next thing you know, they're down by like 20, and you're like, "Whoa, this game just really changed."
But as a coach, I don't know what else you want him to do.
No, I don't.
You call timeout. You bring them over. You talk. You try to get them focused again. And Milwaukee continues to hit shots. Okay, then what do you want him to do? Like you said, do you Mike Tomlin somebody?
Yeah, you tackle somebody, you do something like that. But I just think that the biggest thing is each game is its own thing, in the sense that you can look as good as you want, you know, the Celtics swept the Pacers, they blow out the Bucks in game one, and then they get torched in game two. So you can't just say, oh, look at this team, look at this winning streak. Like, each game is going to be its own thing, and so we'll see what happens. Like, how does Milwaukee shoot in Boston? You know, is Bledsoe knocking down threes, or is he not? You know, is Lopez and Middleton, are those guys knocking down threes, or are they not? And is it just going to be Giannis that's putting up points for him? So I think the Celtics definitely can bounce back, and it's just going to be a tougher, longer series than you know, Paul Pierce and maybe some others felt as soon as they won as impressively as they did in game one.
It is certainly possible that they could still lose this series. In fact, Milwaukee's still favored in this series.
Yeah.
It's not like we're sitting here saying, oh, they'll come home and just clean house. I actually feel pretty good about them right now.
Well, I mean, they're in a spot.
They look so much better in game one than I thought they could against this team.
Right. You knew they were capable of that. But now, after watching game one and game two, did that give you any deja vu to the regular season? Because to me, it kind of did. Because just when you talked yourself into it, they probably had four or five times this year. I remember the game against Indiana where they blew out. This is back when they had Oladipo. They blew out Indiana, and he said, wow, they fixed themselves. Then they're losing to Orlando, Miami, and you know the Nets or whatever. Then they beat Golden State. Remember they went on that trip out west, and they, oh, my God, they beat Golden State. What a game. There was a game against Toronto, and they always followed that up kind of soon thereafter with like a three-game losing streak to bad teams. And so that's not the, you know, it's not like they're going to be playing down to the level of competition, not like that, but it's just a Jekyll and Hyde type of season that they have had, which ended in only 49 wins and the four seed. You could see them play great where they look like one of the best teams in the NBA, but then there are other nights where literally everybody can beat them. Like they've been the most perplexing team, I think, to figure out, not just Celtics team, but like out of all the four major sports, you don't really know what you're going to get. They could win this was one of the teams, they could win the title and lose in the first round. Now, obviously, with no Oladipo, Indiana was a little undermanned, so that obviously didn't happen, but that's just kind of the margin that the Celtics have.
I feel more optimistic about the Celtics winning their series than I do about the Bruins winning theirs right now.
Same. Yeah, same.
Because there's a single player in the Bruins series who's almost single-handedly taking this thing over.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think Bobrovsky has just been so good. Plus, I mean, they're down 2-1. So just simple numbers game, like it's worse. But I just, yeah, if I was putting, Shime, you're a betting man. Right now, if you were going to bet either the Celtics to win the series or the Bruins to win the series, I know you'd make more money if you bet on the Bruins, but it would have to be the Celtics, right?
100% I'm taking the Celtics.
Yeah. I think that's what it is. And it's probably still good money because they're still the dog
in
the series.
If tomorrow night the Bruins win,
yeah,
and you know the Celtics lose Friday night, then you flip it and
they even it up. I feel like, and I'm kind of surprised that home court or home ice hasn't been the most important thing, right? We've already seen the Bucks lose on their court. We saw the Bruins lose on their ice. So a lot of times going into the series, if you think it's going to be close, I usually kind of side with the team that has home court or ice advantage, but that hasn't really seemed to matter, especially for the Bruins throughout this whole playoff run, winning games in Toronto.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We're down here at Fenway Park. We're in the WEEI Ford Clubhouse studio. We'll be on, the Dale and Keefe show will be on till noon, but then we will continue on as part of the Red Sox pregame show after 12 o'clock today. But we will continue to get to your calls and talk with you about both of the games last night and which team you have more confidence in. But before we get to all of that, Rich is ready to trend.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's do it.
I like the way the Bruins are playing for the most part, but the big guys for the Boston Bruins have to get going. Brad Marchand taking a hit here. Harry can't get anything on it on the pass from Bergeron. Bergeron stoned in front, and Pastrnak inexplicably wipes out in the corner several times. These guys got to get it together, or Boston won't win this series.
Mike Milbury on the NBC telecast last night, working with Mike Emmerich. He's right in this regard.
Oh,
if the Bruins' star players don't play better, they've got no chance in this series against Columbus.
So going into the series, I thought Boston was the better team. And I think after the first round, I thought they were the best team left. But after watching Columbus more, is this series a whole lot more even than I should have thought going in? Because obviously the point totals in the regular season is one thing. And right. I know they, you know, they added a couple of pieces, including Matt Duchene at the trade deadline. So they're better than their overall win total would be from the regular season. But I just thought Boston was, outside of Tampa, the best of the rest in the entire NHL. So once they were out, I thought they were the best team. But this series is certainly much more even than I thought.
I'll tell you who I underestimated. I thought he was a really good young defenseman in the NHL. Seth Jones has been so much more than that in this series.
Yeah, there's not very many better than him probably in the league.
He's been a beast in this series.
He plays the whole game.
He never leaves the ice. Yeah. He is a guy who has always been known to have real good offensive instincts, jumps into the play, quarterbacks that power play very effectively. But the book on him was that he's going to give you some chances in his own end. He's going to get caught out of position. He's going to get running around a little bit. Man, not in this series so far.
Yeah,
he has hounded David Pastrnak and Brad Marchand and has made life so miserable for them, they can't get through him to get to the front of the net.
He's been one of the best players in the series. I know Bobrovsky gets a lot of credit, and he should, but really Seth Jones has been unreal. I thought Toronto was a better team than Columbus. They still may be, but it's just they don't have a Seth Jones and they don't have a Bobrovsky. Like, their forwards might be a little bit more of a wash, slight advantage to Toronto. They're not. Toronto's faster than Columbus is, but they just, the Blue Jackets feel like a tougher team. And obviously what they did to Tampa, you can't dismiss
Dismantled them.
They just smoked them. They were down 3-0 in game one. They went on to win that game and every other game in the series. So they are really impressive. And as you said earlier, their power play is working right now. The Bruins isn't.
That's the difference in the series.
That's one of the biggest things. Who has been the best Bruins player through three games? So forget
Charlie McAvoy.
Yeah, and he rung a few posts last night, too. I mean, he was right there.
I mean, Charlie Coyle, you know, has scored some goals, but he's also made some incredibly boneheaded defensive gaffes.
He giveth and he taketh away.
I think McAvoy's probably been the best Bruin in this series.
He seemed
so
to have
far.
The most kind of jump in his step, don't you think,
in
the game last night, where some of the other guys, I know we really have dwelled on Pastrnak, but some of the other guys just seem like a little bit step slower or whatever it is, or maybe they've just taken a beating through 10 playoff games now, and the intensity that is with 10 games. McAvoy seemed like he was real close. And you wonder if a couple of those posts, if they're able to, you know, beat Bobrovsky, because he didn't make the saves on those. There was one, they even showed the replay. Like, he went for it, he missed it.
He was late to catch it.
And so, you know, you could look at it two ways. You know, you hit the post, you're that close, but also you didn't hit the net. Like, that, you were, sorry, you didn't hit it. But if you could get past Bobrovsky, because he's got to be riding such a high right now. Like, for a guy that had no playoff success going into this season, he is now 6-1 just in this postseason against the two best teams in hockey. Like, his confidence level could not be any higher.
I will tell you, and we mentioned this earlier, for those of you who are joining us, people jump in at different times. There will be no supplementary discipline for Brad Marchand. Aaron Portsline, who covers the Blue Jackets for The Athletic, reported that the league looked at it. They said there will be no secondary discipline, no supplemental discipline. There isn't a provision that allows them to fine him during the playoffs. That doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So he will get nothing. So The Athletic put together a panel of experts, people who cover the game.
Ooh, were you on the panel?
No, I was not.
Oh,
seems like
a mess.
And they talked to people about Marchand.
Okay.
And he was polarizing, as you might expect. But I found this one interesting. Scott Burnside writing, he said, "My guess is Columbus would lobby for Marchand to stay in the Boston lineup, given that he's actually been more beneficial to the Blue Jackets' cause in this oh-so-tight series, going four straight games without a point, dating back to Game 7 against Toronto in the first round." He said, watching Marchand take that killer penalty in the second period and then skulk away from the, albeit not-so-killer, punch to Harrington, I was reminded of a longtime conversation with Keith Jones. He thought Marchand wasn't just an X factor for the Bruins. He might be the X factor for the entire playoffs.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, those guys, not only have they been disappointing because they're not scoring goals and they're not, you know, having a successful power play, but they're committing dumb penalties. And then they end up, and Bergeron and Marchand, both of them in the last two games, guys that you want killing penalties.
The Bergeron penalty wasn't a penalty, but that's fine. They called it.
I mean, even he kind of knew. I mean, you got to stick in there, and so it was a penalty. You would think in overtime that maybe it wouldn't be, but whatever. They called it. He put him in a position to give him a chance to call it. They did, and now he's in the box and they lose. Also, Matt Duchene, it's never pretty, but he just kind of plants himself in front of the net on those power plays and ends up coming up with some very timely goals.
617-779-7937. Joe's on the cell phone. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
What's up, guys?
Hey, Joe.
So I'm going to preface what I'm saying by telling you that I am what I would consider average when it comes to hockey IQ. I enjoy the game. But from what I've seen in this particular series, three games, what's most frustrating for me is to see how well the Blue Jackets are creating puck disruption in the passing lanes. And it's in the neutral zone. It's when they get into their offensive zones. It's everywhere. And I'm wondering, Gail, is that scouting? Is that just being in the right place by accident all the damn time? Because they just seem to always disrupt the passing lanes. And that I feel like that's really messing up a lot of what the offense of the Bruins is trying to do here. Just you can never really get going.
Look, I'm not taking anything away from Columbus, because defensively they have just been so good.
They're in the way a lot.
So stout.
Yeah.
But I do think that a big part of the Bruins' problem has been just trying to be too damn fancy.
Yeah.
Try to, you know, do things that I mean,
I think it's a trickle-down effect from Bobrovsky, though, because if you have a mediocre goalie, then you're probably just not even thinking about it. You're like, hey, we're just going to do what we do, and we're just going
to fogging it to the net.
Yeah, we're just going to put up some shots, and we know we're going to come away with goals. But when
now, they had
good,
a lot of shots last night. They had 37 shots.
Right.
But you still had, like Jake DeBrusque said before last night's game, he said, you know, talking about that drop pass where he had the puck in the slot in game two and tried to drop it back to Pastrnak. He said, you know, I've got to learn my lesson. Yeah, I've got to shoot. Then he did the exact same thing last night.
He did not learn his lesson.
And he said after the game, he said, you know, I did it again. I can't. Well, stop.
Yeah, just shoot. Just go ahead and shoot.
You know, we were talking about coaches and coaching and adjustments. Well, if the coaching staff tells Jake DeBrusque, don't do that.
Yeah.
Shoot it. You've got the shot. You have a better shot than Pastrnak. Shoot it. Okay, I got you. Yep. And then he goes and does it again.
Yeah, what do you
what
do?
What are the coaches do?
No, nothing. I mean, that's the guy that and a guy who had a really good regular season, too. So it's not like you're taking some guy out of nowhere and you're like just hoping that he turns it around. Like, no, there's a pretty good track record from this year. Don't you get the sense that in game four, Brad Marchand, it's going to be one of two things. He's either going to have two goals and an assist, or he's going to have
all over the ice and flying.
Or two penalties, maybe even a game misconduct. Like I think it's going to be one or the other, because I think either he's going to finally break through because he's too talented of a player, or his frustration is going to boil over even more than it did at the end of game three.
Scheim, do we have, and you may not have this, do you have the cut from Ed Jovanovsky talking about Marchand? Ed Jovanovsky, of course, played in the league, you know, Florida Panthers and other teams, and he talked about how the Blue Jackets are approaching Brad Marchand.
Yeah, it's pretty calculated. I think, you know, obviously with you know, playing in the era where there was one ref, I think you can get away with it a lot, you know, a lot more. But I think with the two refs, obviously, with their eyes patrolling every, you know, square inch of that surface, you got to be smart. But there is opportunities in a game when things are going on and the time is there to let the guy know. And, you know, you can get away with it without the ref seeing it.
Now, it's funny because last night when we saw the video of Marchand punching Harrington in the back of the head, and all of us sitting there, me and Brick and Barry, we all said, oh, come on, what are you doing?
Of course.
Brick did say to me, he said, I will say this. He said, not defending what he did. He said, but I will say this. What you don't know is what has been going on behind the play to Marchand.
Oh, I'm sure.
And that's what Jovanovsky was talking about there. That the Blue Jackets have been very calculated. You know, let's take shots at them, but let's make sure nobody sees what we're doing.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely doing that, and they should. Every team should do that against Marchand. We were saying that last year, like after he was licking guys. So they keep getting in his face. He can't help himself. So I also think, you know, whether it's chirping him or whether it's, you know, giving him, you know, on the face-off, kind of giving him the business or whatever – the most important thing is keeping him off the score sheet, because I think that is really what's boiling over, because now he's sitting there, all right, the four most important games of the season, he is scoreless. And they're 2-2 in those four games, so it's not like it's been the end of the world, but they're going to win this series, he can't go scoreless.
You've got 2 one-goal losses in this series.
Yeah.
Oh, Do you think Brad Marchand could make a difference?
I feel like he might. I feel like he could be the missing piece.
Kevin is in Rutland. Hey, Kevin. Let me just hit that. There we go. Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Very well. How are you?
Good.
Doing great.
My question is, did you guys notice when the referee was waving off that goal that he had a perfect view and could see clearly that it was a goal?
Yeah, I mean, he was standing right behind the net. Now, I'll say this. If he can't clearly see that the puck is in the net, he's supposed to do that. He's supposed to wave it off. And I got to be honest, I wasn't sure if it was completely across the line until they did the overhead view.
Yeah, once you saw that.
I wasn't sure either.
Okay, furthermore, did you notice that they kept kicking our guys out of the faceoff circle?
Well, Bergeron especially.
Like, Bergeron lost two series.
Yeah, Krejci too, and it just seemed like when they would kick one of their guys out, and it happened rarely in comparison to us, but when they would kick their guys out, it seemed like it was inconsequential guys for the faceoff, you know? Like, in comparison to Bergeron.
Yeah, we talked about that in the first series, the Toronto series. The feeling was that Mike Babcock had been working the officials hey, watch this guy, you know, make sure that he's doing this legally. And it look, he's one of the best faceoff people in the NHL, which is why if you're the opposing team, you don't want him in there. You want him. Now, I don't know. I would be surprised if John Tortorella hasn't said something.
Oh, of course, you're going to try it. Get him out of there. Give yourself any kind of advantage that you can. I mean, one of the reasons why he's so good at it is probably how aggressive he is, and you're apparently going to get tossed out of there.
I think there are times, half the time when they throw guys out, I don't even know what it's for.
Just for show?
You know, I watch it and I go, okay, tell me why you threw him out that time.
Just those guys, you know how refs are. Some of them like to have it be about them.
He did seem to get chucked a lot last night, though. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We're broadcasting live from the WEEI Ford Clubhouse Studio. We take you to the pregame show for Red Sox baseball at the top of the hour. Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Back here at Fenway Park, the WEEI Ford Clubhouse Studio. Afternoon baseball today here at Fenway. It'll be a lovely day.
You got the sun?
It's a little bit, kind of wanting to come out.
All right.
It has been such a miserable weather month.
Oh, it's sad.
For Red Sox fans. I mean, every night, if it's not raining, it's freezing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's both. Rain is not the issue here at Fenway today, but it's kind of cloudy and still raw.
Gloomy.
It has just, I feel bad. You know, there's nothing you can do about that part of it. You can't control that part of it, but boy, it's been a tough month to be a fan in this ballpark.
Yeah, it's been pretty gross, so hopefully we'll turn it around a little bit. So we'll talk some Sox, because we are part of the pregame today, Dale, so we will talk some Sox in just a little bit.
People
get excited about that.
And we listened.
Yeah. Well, it was demanded that we stick around and do the postgame.
That was Joe Zarbano, really.
Well, it was, we're free.
Because we don't cost them anything.
I mean, makes sense.
I think that's a bigger part of it. Look, they are playing better. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
it's kind of ironic if you think about it. We'll talk more about Mookie Betts after the top of the hour, but a guy who we were convinced was being completely derailed by the contract stuff, boy, has he proven us wrong.
Well, I mean, he's just...
He's the back of the baseball card guy.
Right, I mean, he's so talented that that's one slump that wasn't going to last. There are others on the team, both pitching and hitting, that may last because they're not as talented as Mookie Betts, but that was one guy I think we all had faith in was going to be able to turn things around.
So we'll get to the Red Sox at the top of the hour. We will not have a hockey or basketball game to talk about until, well, we won't have one to talk about until Friday.
Bruins tomorrow.
Bruins will play tomorrow night. They will wrap up things in Columbus for this part of the series. Look, they win. They come home 2-2. Everything's great. Now you're back on track. They lose. That's going to be tough to beat Sergei Bobrovsky in 3 straight.
It really will be. And it's just, it's so frustrating. Now, they're only down 2-1, so obviously not the end of the world, not facing elimination. But based on how the NHL playoffs have played out to this point, that it is. I don't think there's ever been a year that has opened itself, that the door has been opened to win a cup. Like, when you look at the teams that have been eliminated already, Tampa Bay obviously is the most significant, but even other teams, like, they've struggled against Holtby and Washington. Well, they're gone. You don't have to play them. You know, Crosby and Malkin, they have all this cup experience. Don't have to play them. They're out. Calgary was the best team out west. They're out. So all of these teams, the 8 teams that are remaining, all have to feel like they have just as good of a shot as any other team at winning. Like, I don't even know what the big upsets would be anymore. Like, these teams are all kind of even across the board. And so for the Bruins to, you know, potentially squander that away makes it even worse. Because if they lost to Tampa like everybody thought it was going to be in this round, you say, hey, they gave it a shot. As long as they don't lose in 5 games like they did last year, they're making improvements. But to get Columbus in the second round, your expectations have to change, and really they should be expected to win this series.
It's hard not to be impressed with the whole atmosphere in Columbus.
They do a great job. I was surprised.
19-3 in the barn last night.
All standing,
you know,
like
everybody
the
stands for the whole game. Forget about the cannon part. It's loud in there.
It was loud on their own.
NBC Sports said Columbus set another ratings record last night. Game 3 did a 13-2 in Columbus, the highest rating ever in the market. They had done an 11 in Game 2 of this series.
That makes
now
sense.
The Bruins in Game 2 did a 17
in
Boston.
Is that out yet?
Haven't seen the Boston number yet.
But the Columbus, I mean, that makes sense because, again, every game that they play is a new record for the longest they have played in their franchise history. Like, they've never made it out of the first round until this season. So they got a team it's easy to get excited about. And just think for them, they were almost sellers. Everybody expected them to be sellers at the deadline.
I thought Panarin's
like,
gone.
What are they
Bobrovsky's
doing?
Gone.
Nope. They decided
they
like,
may
we're
all be
down.
Gone by the way in a couple of months.
They got like 6 free agents or whatever, but they said, you know what? We're going to make some trades and we're going to go for it. Good for them.
So we'll have more basketball and baseball to talk about in tomorrow's show when we get back together. But we'll have Red Sox baseball coming your way in just a little bit. Rich and I will be proud to be part of the pregame show. It's
right.
Joe Castiglione, Mario Impemba, and Lou Marlone on the call of the game today. Afternoon, they got to make sure they get their money's worth out of Lou, too.
Hector Velasquez on the mound, Dale.
Sir, baby. So we've got the pregame show that we will continue. Our thanks to John and Shime and Doug Lane and everybody who made it possible. We are here in the WEEI Ford Clubhouse studio, but stick around because we've got pregame for Red Sox baseball coming up in just a couple of minutes.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.